Today is from Matthew 6, 19 through 24, by using the American Standard Version. Do not store up yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in or steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is clear, your whole body is full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light that is in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth.
If you haven't turned there already, turn your Bibles to Matthew chapter 6, as Pete just read from. Matthew chapter 6, starting in verse 19. We're going to pick up there in just a moment. You don't have to be around Jesus very long to realize that he had a thing or two to say about wealth. Jesus tells us in Matthew chapter 6 that there's two kinds of wealth, as we're going to see. Two kinds of wealth. I want to ask you for a moment, what about Mary? Was Mary, the mother of Jesus, was she rich or was she poor? Well, it really depends entirely of what kind of heart you have and what kind of perspective that you have. Mary was a righteous girl who loved God, was blessed by him, and was willing to serve him to the degree of suffering for him. On the other hand, Mary, she was financially very poor. You look at the kind of offerings that her and Joseph would give in the temple during their worship, and their offering, there were different kinds of offering, different classes of offering, and their offering was in the class of the poor man's offering. They didn't have much money. But you wouldn't think about Mary. Well, Mary is a poor woman. That thought really doesn't cross your mind when you think about Mary. Why? Why? Because she was incredibly blessed. See, her wealth was immense because of her faithfulness to the Lord, her relationship to the Lord. Mary was very wealthy. My view of wealth really comes down entirely to what kind of heart I have. You know, Christianity isn't fundamentally, first and foremost, about what you do. Christianity is first and foremost what you think, which of course changes everything about what you do, but fundamentally Christianity is about what you think. Proverbs 23, verse 7, remember this? So as a man thinks in his heart, so is he. That's familiar to you. Now, before we go any further in this lesson, I want to give a disclaimer. The Bible doesn't say it's wrong to make money. The Bible doesn't say that it's wrong to invest money and to collect interest on that money. The Bible doesn't say that's wrong. What comes to mind is 2 Corinthians chapter 12, for example, where Paul says that children are not to save for their parents, but parents are to save for their children. We're not going to talk about that verse, but I am going to say that here you find this command to save. Well, what about my Lord's parable in Matthew 25, starting with verse 14, where you have the parable of the talents. Remember that? You have a man going away on his journey, and so he entrusts his wealth, his assets to his servants. And he gives to one servant 5 talents, another servant 2 talents, another servant 1 talent. And you remember what happened to those men. The 5-talent man doubled it. The 2-talent man doubled it, but the 1-talent man, he failed. What did he fail to do? He failed to invest. He failed to collect interest in some capacity on that talent. We're not going to talk about that parable, but the whole parable, though, is based on the principle of investing. Well, what about 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 10? It's very interesting how careful Paul was in the wording of that verse. He said, by the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, he says, the love of all money is the root of all evil. Not that money is the root of all evil, but the love of it is the root of all evil. It's not wrong to make money. It's not wrong to invest. It's not wrong to collect interest. With that caveat aside, I want us to appreciate all the things that Jesus had to say about wealth in this passage alone. There's other passages we could look at, but we're just going to focus on Matthew chapter 6, 19 through 24 today. What does he say? Well, look at the first two verses. Jesus teaches us that there are, in fact, hazards to wealth. Look at verse 19. Matthew 6, verse 19. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. It's interesting how Jesus, he zeroes in on three forms of ancient wealth. This is kind of lost on us today, at least some of them are in the 21st century, but this was going to very much resonate with his hearers in the first century. Think, for example, this emphasis on clothing. Clothing was a unit of wealth in the days of my Lord, and really in the days of all of human history, except in the last couple centuries. Clothing was a form of wealth. You recall Achan in Judges chapter 7. The Israelites, right after destroying Jericho, they were commanded not to take anything, but to destroy everything in the city and about the city. Don't take anything, anything that you like. Don't take it. Destroy it. But Achan said in Judges 7, after he was caught, it says he found a cloak, a beautiful cloak, among other things. And he said, I coveted it, so I took it. Why would he do that? Well, a cloak was a form of wealth back then. Or you'll recall Gehazi in 2 Kings chapter 5. He was the servant of the prophet Elisha. And after being forbidden to travel after Naaman, was cleansed of his leprosy, Naaman wanted to pay Elisha for the service rendered. Of course, you're not going to pay the Lord for something like that. He wanted to make sure that he gave Elisha the credit, but Elisha said, no, it's the Lord, and therefore you're not going to pay me for it. But Gehazi, he disregarded that order, and he chased after Naaman, and he lied to Naaman, and he got a large sum of money from Naaman. In addition, 2 Kings chapter 5, verse 22 says, he got two sets of clothing. That seems kind of like an odd mention to us today, but back then that was notable. Clothing was a unit of wealth. Jesus says, let me tell you about wealth. Moths can eat it. You think it's in your closet, you think it's okay, you think, oh, it's safe there, but before you know it, you look at the closet and it's all mothy because it was destroyed. Then the next unit of wealth Jesus talks about. He says, vermin can eat the grain. Now, your version might use the word rust. My version uses the word rust. But I know that we are familiar with how rust can eat away at steel, and many of us have had expensive equipment that has, maybe it's a tool or a firearm or something, and it was away, we hadn't touched it, or we hadn't put oil on it, and before long that rust had gotten to it and zapped it of its value. Don't you hate that? Jesus, of course, is talking about that by extension, but the word that he uses when he says rust, it's literally translated the eater. And so I tend to think that he has grain in mind and varmints that would eat away at the grain. I want you to picture, for example, a farmer who has silos full of grain, and he's sitting down after a long period of work and he's thinking, well, I'm just going to sell my grain bit by bit, just over time, and I'm going to make lots of money. But little does he know it, the varmints, they've broken into the silos, they're eating the grain, they're contaminating the rest. He thinks that wealth is there, but it's not. And then he talks about thieves. They break in and steal. Now, we are familiar with thieves. It's very interesting, though, that in the first century when Jesus was speaking there in that area, houses were made out of dried clay. Can you imagine living in a house made out of dried clay? And so Jesus says thieves break in. The Greek word that Jesus used was diaruzo, which literally means, you ready for this? To dig through. So he's saying, you think that everything's stored safely in your house, but thieves, they're just going to dig through the walls. They're going to take it. Nothing's safe. That's what Jesus is communicating. Nothing is safe. Jesus says there are hazards attached to any kind of material wealth that you can imagine. Proverbs 23, verse 5 says this. You read, when your eyes light on it, it's gone. For suddenly it sprouts wings, flying like an eagle toward heaven. It reminds me of something one of my bosses many years ago told me. We were having our first child, Ezra, and it was about that time my boss called me into a meeting. It was a one-on-one meeting. You always get nervous about those kinds of meetings. But he said, no, I'm going to give you a raise. And I told him how grateful I was. And he said, but you've got a baby coming, and as soon as that baby gets here, this is what's going to happen to that. It flies away. Think about that. Well, if it doesn't last very long. You think about a man who's just bought 100 acres of farmland, and he's standing on the property for the first time. That property is belonging to him, and he feels just a great deal of pride. This is my property. You know the feeling. He owns this property now, but the thing is, this particular man, he's a Christian. And it occurs to him, he's not the first person who's ever stood on that land and felt pride over ownership. There were other people before him that bought that land. Other people before him that just got bored with it and decided to sell it. Or other people before him, they died and their widows auctioned it off. Or there were other men that worked it for years but then got too old to work it. And then it occurs to this man, he doesn't really own it. Not in the big picture of things. Someone else after him is also going to own this land. And someone after them, he doesn't really own it. Not in the big picture of things. Everything ultimately belongs to God. You can't hold on to something like that. Jesus says, let me tell you about wealth. You can't hold on to it. But there is something you can hold on to. Philippians chapter 3, verse 13. Paul says, I strain toward the prize. Of what? The upward call. He's referring to heaven. He can't wait to get there. Everything about his life is he's living in view of heaven. What does this do, by the way, to how we approach giving? This understanding of wealth. What does it do to our understanding of giving? Paul writes in 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 6, the point is this. Whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. And whoever sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. Each one must give as he has made up his mind, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. Is that reflected in your giving? When you understand, just as that man who bought that property understood that he doesn't really own this. All the property that we have, all the assets that we have, all the finances that we have, whatever your account looks like, whatever your net worth looks like, when you realize it doesn't really belong to you to begin with. What does that do to our giving? It should change it. It should redefine the kind of giving we participate in. Remember next, I want you to see this, what Jesus says. He says this. You either have good eyesight or bad eyesight. Now look at verse 22. Verse 22, this is what Jesus says. He says, the eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light is in you is darkness, how great is the darkness. Now, you don't have to overcomplicate this verse. All he's saying is that the eyes, metaphorically, are the windows to the world. Your eyes are how you relate to the world. It's kind of like a window. If the window is dirty, if it's covered up, then the room is consigned to darkness. And so if you want to be able to see, you've got to keep the windows clean. The eyes are the windows to the world. What does it mean to have good vision? What does it mean to have good eyesight? Well, it means to have one value in life. One true thing in life that you are focusing on. And it doesn't have anything to do with materialism. It doesn't have anything to do with stuff or things. The Apostle Paul writes in 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 2, he says, I determined not to know anything among you except Jesus Christ and Him crucified. Now, wait a minute, Ben. Paul talked about other things, even in 1 Corinthians, different things other than Jesus and His life and His resurrection and His crucifixion. He talked about more things than that. Well, of course. What is he talking about? He says everything that he did talk about, everything that he did, everything, how he interacted with the members there in Corinth, everything was founded upon this one foundational element, the reality of Jesus' life, his death, his penal substitutionary atonement there on the cross, and his resurrection. Everything circled around that fact. Everything was touched by that. What about your life? There needs to be one single-minded devotion. Just as it was with Paul, so it needs to be with you. You got to keep the windows clean. That's what Jesus is teaching. There's nothing more important in life than living your life and going to heaven. You think that's just some cute phrase we teach our kids? One of the reasons why we say it is so that it'll get ingrained into the adults' minds who are listening. What's the most important thing in life? Living your life and going to heaven. What's the most important thing in life? Living your life and going to heaven. Is that overly simplistic? I don't believe so. You got to keep the windows clean. Because the most important things in life aren't things. They're people and their relationship with the Lord. Bad eyesight. One of the consequences of bad eyesight is double vision. You ever found someone that has double vision? You know, one of the sad things, spiritually speaking, of someone who has double vision is that they often don't realize it. They don't realize that they can't see things clearly. They're double-minded. They're living this double life. They're living this double form of reasoning, and they're unstable, and they don't even know it. They think they see clearly, but they don't. This isn't just about money. When I forget my purpose in life, it affects every other aspect of my life. I've got to maintain my focus. I want you to think about a rich man. How is it that a rich man can actually be poor? I'm going to give you four ways a rich man can be poor. Number one, a rich man is poor when he thinks that he can find his satisfaction in money. He's in fact very poor when he thinks he can be satisfied with money. Ecclesiastes chapter 5 verse 10 says this. It says, he who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves wealth with his income. This also is vanity, the writer writes. There was a poor man who said to a rich man, I've got more than you have. The rich man looked at him with a puzzled look and said, how do you figure that? The poor man said, I've got everything that I want, and you don't. There's great wealth in being content. Number two, a rich man is poor when his wealth is increasing, but his relationship with the Lord is still not right. Picture a teenager who is gambling, tries gambling for the first time. You know what I hope happens? I hope he loses everything. I hope he loses everything in his pocket. I hope it hurts. You find a teenager that tries alcohol for the first time. I hope he gets so sick he throws up all night. You find a teenager that tries lying or cheating. I hope he gets caught. And I hope he has incredible consequences as a result. Why? Am I mean for thinking that? No! I want him to get caught because I don't want him to like it. In fact, I want his first experience to be so awful he never wants to try it again. Here's what you should never say to a young person. You should never say to a young person, make all the money you possibly can. Just do it honestly and ethically. What's wrong with that? Well, that's what the world teaches. That's what business classes at college will teach. But the problem with it is it's too nearsighted. Instead, what you ought to say to a young man is, make what you can, but never forget your purpose in life. Never forget what truly matters. The most important thing in your life is your relationship with the Lord. Never forget that. Proverbs chapter 15, verse 6 says this, in the house of the righteous, there's much treasure, but trouble befalls the income of the wicked. What else is a rich man poor? Well, he's also poor when he's a slave to his money. And haven't we seen people like that? And that might even describe someone in this room right now. You're a slave. You're a slave to your money. Proverbs 23. This is what we read. Verse 4 says, do not toil to acquire wealth. Be discerning enough to desist. Isn't it interesting? Maybe you've noticed this in your life. The physical wants in your life, they scream for your attention. But the spiritual aspect is often a whisper. Pay attention that you not become a slave to your wealth. Number 4, a rich man is actually poor when he dies a Christless death. We read in Proverbs chapter 11, verse 4, your riches do not profit in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death. I don't think it's an accident that in Luke chapter 16 you read about that story of the rich man and Lazarus. I don't think it's an accident that Jesus goes out of his way to paint the rich man as being rich. He didn't go to torment because he was rich. The poor man didn't go to heaven because he was poor. Your wealth does not determine your standing before the Lord. Remember the disclaimers. But what was so tragic is that he was rich. And the reason why he was rich, and Jesus went out of his way to paint the fact that he was rich and still went to torment, is because the ultimate tragedy is the squandered life. Death is not the ultimate tragedy. We're all going to face death, but you don't have to live a squandered life if you don't want to. The rich man, he did. And the rich man, who lived in view of his materialism rather in view of other people and his service to God, he will forever remind us of Romans chapter 6, verse 23, which says, the wages of sin is death. I read a story once of a man by the name of Charlie Dobson. He is a resident of Ontario, Canada. And where he lived in that particular region, they didn't have trash pickup. And so he really struggled with this. And so he figured out a way to deal with that trash. What he would do is he would put his trash in a box and he'd wrap it up in wrapping paper and put a bow on it and set it by the road. And invariably, there would be someone, always a different car, of course, but there would always be someone in a car pull up and put that present in their car and drive off. And he really got a kick out of this. He would just kind of watch behind his curtain and watch people drive away with gift-wrapped trash. Isn't that what the devil does to us? That's what materialism is. When we live for wealth, when we live for stuff, that's all we're getting. Remember the disclaimer. It's not wrong to have money, but it is wrong to have the wrong kind of eyes. Lastly, Jesus talks about the demand of wealth. Look at verse 24. He says, no one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You can't serve God and money. The master here that Jesus is referring to literally refers to a slave master. In other words, you're never truly free. You ever know that? You're serving some sort of master right now as we speak. The question is, which kind of master do you have? Which kind of master do you want? See, perhaps there's someone in this room that needs to pray this prayer. I've had to pray this prayer before. This prayer that says, God, I haven't had clear vision. And now I'm going to hand everything over to you. I hand over my job, my career, my family, my kids, my spouse, my wealth. Everything that I have, I hand over to you because it already belongs to you. And help me to live in view of you. Help my absolute devotion to be only to you. Because in reality, there's nothing more important in your life than God. I want you to picture a man who says, I love you, to his wife every morning in the sweetest, most kind way. Every morning he gets out of bed and kisses his wife on the cheek. I love you. I want you to picture that wife saying to her husband, I'd really like a dishwasher. I've been washing dishes by hand for 20 years, and I've seen these new models that they have, and they really do a great job. I think that my life would be a lot easier with a dishwasher. And think about that husband looking at his wife and telling her how much he loves her. But the next day, he drives home with a brand new boat and all the fixings. And then the next week, he drives home with a brand new four-wheeler for his hunting trip that he's been planning and all the fixings along with that. And she never gets that dishwasher. Does that man really love his wife? You say no. And the answer is correct. Of course not. Why? Because his actions don't line up with his words. We've seen people whose actions don't match their words. Think about a man that claims to love his family, but he comes home. If he comes home at any kind of reasonable hour of the day, he comes home drunk and he beats up on his family, abuses them some way. Think about a wife who claims to love her husband, but she's cheating on him. She's having several sexual encounters with other men. The same is true with a Christian who claims to love God, but comes into this church building or some other aspect of his life and doesn't contribute to the Lord cheerfully or joyfully. We must give with a cheerful heart. The only way you can do that is by recognizing that everything that you have doesn't actually belong to you to begin with. You're here a servant to the Lord. And as such, we want to give back to the Lord liberally. It should scare us that so many members of the church, they might give 2-3% of their income. If that. And we forget the fact that loving God is the chief virtue. It's the number one commandment. Mark chapter 12, verse 30 says, love the Lord your God with all of your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And you know what Paul says? He directly ties our eagerness and the amount that we're able to give and that we choose to give to the love that we have for the Lord in 2 Corinthians chapter 8. Living our giving is proof. But so many people, when the collection plate goes on past them, what they do, not in words but in action, they're lying. What is your net worth? I want you to ask that question to yourself. What is your net worth? Your net worth is everything in your life right now that money can't buy and that death can't take away. That's how much you're worth. Now, I want you to listen very closely because I'm going to give you a command. I know that's kind of unusual because I never preface things that way, but I'm going to do it this time. Listen very closely. I'm going to give you a command, and I don't want to minimize the thrust of what I just said. I'm going to give you a command. The command is this. If you have material goods of any kind, don't be snobbish. I want you to put your trust in God, not your possessions. Whatever you do have, you share with other people. Now, Ben, that's kind of harsh. Why would you say that? I want you to be impressed with the fact that I'm simply doing what I'm told. And the one who told me to say that is the Lord Himself. The Apostle Paul wrote to Timothy in 1 Corinthians, or rather 1 Timothy. I want you to see this. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 17. As for the rich of this present age, charge them, command them, not to be haughty, nor to set their hopes on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly provides us with everything to enjoy. They are to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share. That's simply a command that I was ordered by God as a gospel preacher to teach to those around me. How did I do? Don't take it out on me. Jesus says there's two kinds of wealth. Are you laying up for yourselves treasures in heaven? On this earth, moth and rust, thieves destroy. But there is a place where you don't have to worry about that, and there's a form of wealth where you don't have to worry about that. Do you have a safety deposit box waiting for you in heaven? If you're subject to the invitation in any way, I hope you'll be willing to respond. Have a tender heart. What can we do to help you in your walk with the Lord? If you need to put on Christ in baptism, make that commitment to the Lord right now that you're going to serve Him, that you don't belong to yourself. Everything about you is going to revolve around Jesus Christ and Him crucified. Why don't you crucify yourself today if you haven't already? Be immersed in water for the forgiveness of your sins. Be restored to the church if you've been estranged. Come forward right now as we stand and sing.